Good morning, brothers and sisters. Let us commence our meeting this morning with the singing of hymn number 214. Hymn number 214. Great is thy faithfulness, O God our Father. There is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not. Thy compassions, they fail not. As thou hast been, thou forever wilt be. Hymn number 214. Before Brother Alan speaks to us, we will sing hymn number 92A. Hymn 92A. Dreary and dark our way throughout the evil day. Wrongs we deplore, but whom thou lovest well, thy chosen Israel. Glad in thy light shall dwell, light evermore. Hymn 92A. We'll now be pleased to hear the words of Brother Alan.
I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of an horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock and established my goings. And he hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear, and shall trust in the Lord. With those words, brethren and sisters, the psalm we read a few minutes ago began. It was a psalm written by David, but we know that it is a messianic psalm and is quoted in the letter to the Hebrews, with reference to the Lord Jesus, as we will see later. But I think there's also a remarkable connection between this psalm and the story of Joseph that we've also started reading today. And perhaps that's not entirely surprising, because we are aware that Joseph was a type of Jesus, and so we can expect there to be a link between these people. But the link that I'd like to explore for a few minutes this morning is not the very important and well-known theme of the doctrinal pattern that is apparent in the type, but rather the personal aspect, the things that mattered to these men as human beings. In a Christadelphian commentary by Mark Vincent on the Psalms, it's pointed out that these Psalms of David bring forth two aspects. One is the type of Jesus, the doctrinal type, and the other is the humanity of the man of God. There is much less emphasis in these Psalms on the triumph of the king over his enemies. Obviously, David did seek triumph and indeed vengeance upon his enemies. But when reading these Psalms, we're more conscious of the struggles and anxieties that he faced as a man. And likewise, our Lord is presented to us in the Gospels as a man who experienced the whole range of human problems and anxieties. Of course, we do read about his kingly work, and we know he sought vengeance as well. But we remember him for his humanity even more. And this is the man who gave his life for us. A man who we've come to remember this morning. He was a man who was subject to the same temptations that we are, but unlike us, always overcame. He was a man who now acts as our mediator and our high priest, interceding on our behalf before the Father, so that we might gain the kingdom that we know is already his. This is the man that we have come to think about, to lay before him our problems, and from him to seek forgiveness and to gather strength. So back to the psalm, Psalm 40 in fact. David opens that psalm by describing how he was brought up out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay. And I imagine he must have experienced that in real life, even though we're not sure exactly when it would have been. Perhaps it was one of those things that occurred to him as he went about his hard daily life looking after the animals, the flock. Maybe it happened when he was struggling with his enemies, fleeing from them. But whatever it was, whatever caused him to be in that pit, it made a very deep impression upon him. And he was not slow to draw lessons from it. But let's consider what else is contained in this psalm, which has this as its background. His release from that pit spurred him on forwards with a new song on his lips. He was strengthened in his determination to resist the proud and ungodly. He acknowledged that God wanted his personal service rather than a ritualistic observance of sacrifices. He expressed delight in God's law, which he wanted to tell others about, to share with him. He was very aware of the presence of many enemies. He knew that he did not have the resources and strength in himself, the great men that he saw in battle, but he depended on God to save him. All of that comes out in this short psalm. And there are many similarities between the sentiments expressed in this psalm and the Lord's Prayer that we are familiar with, where the emphasis is on praise to God, asking God to help us, to help us to serve him better, and only a little about seeking provision for the present. By the time he wrote this psalm, David would have got all these things worked out in his mind. He was well aware of true values and right priorities. And there's a personal exhortation, a very powerful one, in these things. David wasn't an old man when he wrote this. In fact, he was probably still learning very fast, with a long way to go, and tragically many mistakes still to come. This was the story of his life. But now is the moment, I think, to trace some of these experiences and some of the things that he brings out in this psalm with what we know about the life of Joseph, and through these two men, to ourselves as well. David then had been in a pit. He'd been a captive. He wasn't the only servant of God to have found himself trapped in a pit or some other kind of confined space, where he began to think about the deep and profound issues of his life. Joseph also found himself captive in a pit. There he had the opportunity to think beyond the immediate reactions of anger and bewilderment to something more spiritual. That experience, which was forced upon him, marked a turning point in his life. And the turning point was not the fact that he was not going home again, but rather into Egypt, but the turning point was in his spiritual development. For Joseph, that pit probably was an underground cistern used to store water for the shepherds looking after their flocks in remote desert places. It would have been roomy enough, probably, but there was no way of escaping from it. It was probably slippery and cold at the bottom. We don't know how long he was there, whether it was short or long. And whatever of those, there was the uncertainty and the fear, which would have been overwhelming for him. But Joseph already had the qualities that the Almighty could work on as his wider plan developed. And a brother wrote, not that long ago, actually, that possibly Joseph's character was born in that pit. Not before, and not necessarily so much afterwards, but in the pit, where he was compelled to think about his life. It's perfectly clear from the record that he was far from perfect. But here was the moment when a sound knowledge and a sense of destiny was mixed with the beginnings of wisdom. We have, in the record of his life, an unparalleled account of the development of character. And it's given to us so that we can measure ourselves against it. And that's what we're here to do this morning, to think, to examine ourselves as to how our characters are developing. So what sort of a person was the Joseph that we read about when he was pushed roughly into that pit from which there was no escape? He was the first son of his father's favourite wife, Rachel. But remember that Rachel was a tricky personality, having some of the characteristics of her scheming father, Laban. And Joseph might have inherited some of that. But to his father Jacob, Joseph was a special son, much younger than the brothers born of the other wife and the handmaids. He grew up in that wider family where there were inevitable tensions and quarrels between those four women and their other truculent sons, although no doubt Joseph was protected to some degree from the worst of that by his loving parents. But when he was not quite in his teens, his mother died. I'm sure it must have been a real tragedy for that boy. He was so much younger than those rough men who may already have resented his presence. And we can imagine how carefully and lovingly Jacob would have cared for his son, Joseph, in perhaps a way that he hadn't done for his other sons, and tried so much to instill in him a healthy respect for God, perhaps even thinking about some of the mistakes he'd made with the others. But probably Joseph's relationship with his brothers plummeted when the real firstborn Reuben committed an infamous sin in his affair with Bilpah, Rachel's maid soon after his mother died. And Joseph was promoted to being the holder of the birthright. The coat of many colours which Joseph was given at the age of 17 possibly recognised his new position and carried a certain religious significance. Thus Joseph stood out. The honour could not remain with Reuben, and the other brothers knew that it couldn't go to them either. It had gone to the youngest. Thereafter, Joseph showed a mixture of maturity, but also naivety. He had seen the moral weakness of his brothers, and he knew right from wrong. But he also had no qualms in complying with his father's request to go to his brothers in the wilderness where they were keeping their sheep. "Come, I will send thee unto them," had said Jacob to his son. And Joseph said, "Here am I." He was willing to do that for his father. And we detect a parallel here between Joseph and Jesus in his willingness to go about his father's business, and also the similar descriptions of other faithful men who have said, "Here am I, send me." And there is an exhortation again for us, because Joseph went, knowing the inevitable hatred that his brothers felt towards him, and the risk that they posed as Joseph travelled far from home to visit them. And as we read this morning, he went so far and then got lost. But even then, Dothan was 12 more miles further on than Shechem. And yet he didn't hesitate to go on. So at the age of 17 or thereabouts, he sets us quite an example in his determination to fulfill the request of his father. But since we are trying to become wise, it's helpful for us to look at the other side of the story. A story which is played out in parallel with what we read, where lack of judgment seems apparent, with the benefit of hindsight, of course. We can discern aspects of human nature here which also teach us lessons. Perhaps Joseph wasn't very sensible in the things that he chose to say to his brothers. And yet, in the midst of that, as he does for us, God uses those ordinary and unplanned circumstances of our lives to work through his purpose. We don't have to be experienced and wise in our lives or in the truth to be an instrument in God's purpose. God will work with us, whatever our position in life. In God's eyes, he can work with the most foolish person and also the most shrewd. And I think that can be very comforting and reassuring for all of us, perhaps those of us who are young or young in the truth, or those of us who have made mistakes or are uncertain of what action we should take in any given situation. And then think about Jacob. Had Jacob used Joseph, his son, as a spy to see what his brothers were up to? Had he reacted unwisely, albeit understandably, at the poor behaviour of the handmaids of his wives, and had channeled perhaps too much affection upon Joseph? Was it fair of him to have sent Joseph alone to meet those brothers so far away? It was a decision that he was to bitterly regret. And was there just a hint of pride in Joseph's voice as he related to his brothers the contents of the dreams he had had with their obvious interpretation? And so this is how one brother writes about it. The seeds of later personality may very well have been present early, but they needed germination and the tender care of God to bring them out. And this is what his traumatic experiences were designed to do. Similarly, for our own character and others' characters, we should really be looking to the future. That is what God is doing after all. We could say that Joseph's naivety resulted in him ending up in that pit. We ourselves may find ourselves in some uncomfortable situation that might be traced back to something rather foolish. But we have to move on. We have to look to the future. Joseph was clearly sufficiently wise at heart to put his natural anger behind him and look forward. He would have been fearful, sorrowful, anxious, emotions that would by no means have been reduced in any way at all by subsequently being sold as a slave to the passing Midianite traders, being tied by ropes to their camels, and going back past his family home on his journey to Egypt. As the sun went down on the first day, he would have felt the chill of the desert night. And then the next day, he would have been exposed to the searing heat of the sun. And so he arrived in Egypt. But Joseph looked forward, and as his faith was strained and tested, it came out stronger, and he asked God to show him the spiritual way forward. He realized, perhaps, that his own folly had brought him to this point, and here is the beginning of humility. Withhold not thou thy tender mercies from me, O Lord. Let thy loving kindness and thy truth continually preserve me. For innumerable evils have compassed me about. My iniquities have taken hold upon me, so that I am not able to look up. They are more than the hairs of mine head. Therefore my heart faileth me. Be pleased, O Lord, to deliver me. O Lord, make haste to help me. Those, of course, are the words of David in the psalm, but how accurately they would echo the thoughts of this young man, Joseph, as he travelled down that road to the great and powerful nation of Egypt. As he did so, he would have been separated from all that was familiar to him, not only in terms of the creature comforts, but also the company and the spiritual guidance of his father Jacob. Who now, naturally speaking, would give him the foundation of faith that had become the guiding principle of his life? That was now all gone, suddenly taken away. It was never going to be replaced. Joseph was not to see his father for many years to come, and so far as he knew, it was never going to happen. Compared to him, brethren and sisters, all of us here continue to enjoy privileges in our freedom to come close to God through his word and through the family that we have in our ecclesias. Those are precious benefits. Do we use them? Imagine what Joseph would have given to be back in the security of his father's house, albeit one that had seen its tensions and its problems. Imagine how he would have treasured something to read that would remind him of his beliefs, shown him examples of the lives of others. He did not have it, but we do. Think about it. Now, during the next few days, God willing, we shall read much more about Joseph. He is the man whose life we are to take notice of, since for the time being we read no more about his family. So let's just think a little bit more about Joseph and perhaps the things that we will consider in the coming week, God willing. The spiritual demeanour of Joseph was the first thing that we note when he arrived in Egypt. No doubt, as a fit and good-looking lad from Canaan, he would have appeared different from the mass of bedraggled and despondent men, and perhaps women, up for sale in the slave market. He would have been highly attractive to the master of the king's bodyguard, who was no doubt looking for someone a bit different, a bit special, someone other than the norm. Maybe Joseph was given some kind of aptitude test as well, not just a test of his physical strength, because this man was going to have serious work to do in the king's household. And the king's representative wasn't disappointed, and Joseph's qualities quickly became apparent when he entered his service. And of course, he was also being developed for the use of a much greater master than Potiphar. There in Egypt, Joseph became an influential and successful man. And I think there is another lesson for us. He was compelled, by force of circumstances, to devote all his energies to the service of the king. However, he was without any opportunity to recharge his spiritual batteries. Perhaps he even began to enjoy the stimulation of his new and very different environment. There was so much to see and learn, new people to get to know, a high standard of living such as he'd never experienced, power and influence. Maybe he thought, with the dreams that he'd already had, that this was actually how it was coming true. So here was a man at the beginning of what we might call a successful career. He was, after all, just a teenager. Remember that just a little while earlier, he'd made that mistake of alienating his brothers for being rather too forward in telling them of his own superiority. Perhaps there was still just a trace of that in his mind as he embarked on his new life. And I think for those of us who are in work today, whether at the beginning of our careers or a little further on, this is worth thinking about. Because more than ever before, business in whatever sector demands more and more of our time and commitment. With efficiencies to make and pressure to do more with less, many of us are being required to cover the work formerly done by several people. I'm sure several of you will recognize that scenario. And at the same time, ambitious people among whom we work are expecting more and more from other parts of their lives. Lives which are to be lived without undue regard for the sensitivities and the needs of other people. That's why, and I speak from those that I work with, people buy up property for investment and building projects, why they take up extreme sports, why they go on complicated and expensive and ambitious travelling expeditions. Superficially, it seems impressive. It seems to be the way to go. What did Joseph do? We're not told any of the details. We have to read between the lines. But it's hard not to draw some conclusions. We're certain that the Almighty worked with him to make up the lost opportunities that were now a distant memory in Canaan. He never forgot his destiny, what God had called him to do. He was maturing in wisdom. He found time for God, and where others rushed around seeking fulfillment in this present life, Joseph had a different agenda. Brethren and sisters, today will no doubt agree that the very discipline of looking up the lives of men such as Joseph can only help us take a check on our own lives and help us steer a sensible course through the pressures and the opportunities and the temptations of our present circumstances. Joseph didn't have the things to look up that we do. But we feel certain that he set boundaries between his daily duties and opportunities and his devotions to God. Well, Joseph had been in Egypt for perhaps 10 years, when he would have been in his late 20s, when the record tells us about another difficult event. And at that age, you could almost see it coming. His master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph and she said, "Lie with me." The scriptures are sometimes unbelievably open. Isn't this the kind of thing that happens all around us today? The scriptural record doesn't beat around the bush. Did God deliver him? Was Joseph able to dismiss that advance because he was a man of influence and prestige? We all know that life isn't as easy as that. Other people are powerful too. They do not necessarily have our interests at heart. They suffer from the weakness of the flesh as well. Sometimes God leaves us to make the necessary decisions for ourselves before he will do anything. And God used that unpleasant occasion to help develop Joseph further. But once again, over a long period of time, with twists and turns that could not be predicted, and with an outcome that was far from certain. And so Joseph became a captive once again. There in the prison, he would have remembered that it was not the first time that liberty had been taken away from him. And he was then reminded once again of the wonder of God's revelation coming through dreams. The baker, the butler, and then the king himself had dreams. Joseph knew about the power of dreams. All of them were pivotal in revealing to Joseph what was to happen over the next few years. We wonder whether Joseph was now beginning to feel whether he could peer into the future and see how it might relate to the destiny that God had revealed to him 10 years before. Did this intelligent and godly man feel a twinge of excitement as perhaps the future began to spread out before him with his own place within it beginning to become apparent? Today, we have the prophecies to inspire us and to excite us. We have the signs in the world which are intensifying at an ever-increasing rate, telling us that all those things that we have learned and believe in are coming to pass. Does any of that have an impact upon our personal lives? Do we use those things to take a check on ourselves, our aspirations, our interests, our responsibilities, our concerns? Remember that if Joseph had been taken in by the advance of Potiphar's wife, or had lost his self-control when faced with those false accusations, the outcome would have been very different for him. And we all face temptations of one kind or another. If it happens to us, then we know what to do. We hold fast. We know how the story of Joseph worked out. Wonderfully, the position to which Joseph rose as a result of those interpretations of those dreams was a catalyst for bringing him into contact with his family again. How fortuitous then, perhaps, that Joseph was denied another family which would have taken him away from his roots and from his original family forever. He was never given the opportunity to rebuild his life in such a way that would have separated him from his father and his brothers forever. And that's the point on which we need to finish our brief look at the life of Joseph. And so we read later on, "Come near to me, I pray you." And they, the brothers, came near. And he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not ye grieved, nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. God sent me before you to preserve you, a posterity in the earth, to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt." And thus that tall, handsome holder of the birthright, now clothed in the rich robes of the Egyptian court, came face to face with the dusty, travel-worn men from Canaan with their ungracious past. They were brothers. Joseph, despite the loneliness and isolation of the past 25 years, had grown in wisdom to such an extent that he not only recognized those men, but extended to them the hand of friendship and forgiveness, all the time acknowledging a far greater force for good that had worked behind the scenes consistently all during that time. Well, if Psalm 40 is a commentary on the mind of Joseph, expressing by the similarly minded David, then we can now find the link that we're looking for with our own Lord and Saviour, Jesus Christ. The same psalm is quoted in Hebrews chapter 10 with reference to him. "Wherefore, when he cometh into the world, he saith, sacrifice and offering thou wouldest not, but a body hast thou prepared me. In burnt offerings and sacrifices for sin thou hast had no pleasure. Then I said, lo, I come. In the volume of the book it is written of me, to do thy will, O God." Above, when he said, "Sacrifice and offering and burnt offerings and offerings for sin thou wouldest not, neither hadst pleasure therein, which are offered by the law." Then he said, "Lo, I come to do thy will, O God." He taketh away the first, that he may establish the second. By the which will we are sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all. Words which can be applied to Joseph and David, but now much more applied in Jesus. Unlike Joseph, Jesus never acted unwisely. Yet we know that in his earliest years, he grew in wisdom. It didn't come all at once. Throughout his life, in all the trials and temptations that he experienced, he developed wisdom. He felt anger, bewilderment, and frustration. He would have been tempted with honor and power and sensual desire. But his mission was to do God's will. Soon he will meet again those who have rejected him and extend his hand to them, because we know that in the hour of their crisis, the Jews will accept their Messiah. But we have already received the opportunity to benefit from the life's work of this antitypical Joseph. We are already part of his spiritual family. We're trying to parallel our lives with his, to develop an attitude and approach to life as he did. We anticipate sharing the future with him forever in the promised land. And this bread and wine on the table remind us of the covenant that has been made with us.
For our memorial hymn, we will sing the prayer contained in hymn number 202. 202. "Our Heavenly Father, who by grace hath called us to bear the name of thy beloved Son, Shine forth thy blessings down upon thy children as we in prayer approach thy glorious throne. Hymn 202. Conclude the meeting this morning with hymn 197, after which Brother Cecil will give the final prayer. Lord of all power, I give you my will, in joyful obedience your tasks to fulfill. Your bondage is freedom, your service is song, and held in your keeping, my weakness is strong. Hymn number 197.